What we're talking about today is how to craft the perfect pitch. But the thing is that what I see every time I do pitch critiques with writers is that some of the issues in their pitches actually come before the pitch is ever written. It has to do with the idea itself. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to make sure you have the right idea through five ways to tell you shouldn't write a pitch yet. And we're also going to talk about how to formulate the perfect three-paragraph pitch. So the idea of the three-paragraph pitch is that it keeps you from spending too much time pitching, from spending too much time doing the research actually that precedes the pitch, not necessarily from writing the pitch itself. And so when we go through this three-paragraph pitch structure, God, that's a bit of a tongue twister, the three-paragraph pitch structure keeps you from researching and including extra information that editors don't actually need to see in your pitch, which people often research, and then what happens is they put so much stuff in their pitch that the editor gets into a too long, didn't read situation, and so it makes it hard for you to get in touch with new editors. And then finally, at the end of the call, we're going to talk about some of the most frequent questions that writers have about pitching. And this past weekend, we had our first weekend retreat at our writing center in the Catskill Mountains, and it was called the Pitchapalooza, and it was all about pitches. And one of the great things about doing the Pitchapalooza was that I spent, you know, basically 2.5 days talking pitching with writers who were at all different stages in their career. And what that meant was that I got to see in that little group some trends that go across all sorts of different writers, writers who come from PR and they're comfortable with the concept of pitching, writers who've been writing for a long time but always for the same magazine. And it really shed light on some things that I don't always address on the blog, and so I'm excited to share the answers to some of these frequent questions with you today. I'm actually a former magazine editor as well, so I've sat on both sides of the desk, and I bring both of those perspectives to when I talk to you about pitching, because the thing is that I think as freelance writers, we often get into this mentality where the editors are sort of these faceless beings on the other end of emails, you know, and we don't think about their day and the challenges that they confront. And so having been there myself, I'm very familiar with that. And then also I'm a contributing editor for multiple trade publications, and contributing editors are actually not people who edit per se. They don't write, or rather they don't edit articles that come in from other writers, but they're on contract to write frequently. So I also have editors that I work with very often in that capacity. All right, so before we talk about what goes into the perfect pitch, what is the real purpose of a pitch? And I love if you guys could chime in on the side in response to this question. Because before we talk about pitching, I think it's important to understand what is the point of a pitch letter. What is the point of that email? It's not really a letter anymore, right? It's always an email. But what is the point of that communication? Are we trying to get an assignment? Are we trying to get a response? Are we trying to get more information from the editor about the publication? What are we trying to do? And for the purposes of this conversation, I like to think that we are starting a conversation with the editors, because think about it this way. I love this quote from Jordan Heller, who is the editor-in-chief of Hemispheres magazine. And what he says is that I once had a guy call me up and he gave me a one-word pitch. He said, Macau. And that's not really a pitch, is it? It's not a narrative, it's just a place. And you know, obviously, I'm hoping that all of you that are on this call look at that and say, oh, that's silly, I would never call up or write an editor and just say Macau. But the thing is, I think we often forget that just as a one-word pitch that's really a destination, Macau, is useless, there's a lot of other types of pitches that don't really mean anything to an editor that we can do. And so, like I said, as far as I'm concerned, the main purpose of a pitch is not to get an assignment. It's to start a conversation with the editor. And the thing is, what does that conversation mean? Is that conversation to get you an assignment? Yes, that's like a further along goal. But in the near term, the purpose of that conversation is to show the editor that they want to work with you. Not just that you want to work with them, because that's obvious because you're sending them a pitch, but to show the editor that they want to work with you. And so how do we do that? We do that by showing the editor that we are capable of producing good ideas. We do that by showing the editor that we are professional, which doesn't just mean using business-like conversation or business-like words. I see a lot of people write pitches that have a sort of stilted business language, which is not actually super effective. Because what happens is if an editor gets a pitch from somebody, and it seems very stilted, it seems sort of like this person, you know, maybe doesn't have a good writing background and they spend too much time poring over their words editing them. Or maybe this person is a second language English speaker, or all sorts of things that we don't think about when we do the final proofread on our pitch, but that can come across when our pitch has this sort of stilted over businessy language that doesn't really show the editor that you're someone that they want to work with. So the ways that we can show an editor through our pitches that we're professionals is actually by using certain industry terms and by using certain structures, like the three-paragraph structure we're going to talk about later on. And the third and probably one of the most important things that we can show an editor is that we understand their publication, and I'm going to talk about how to do that as well. Now, when you pitch with this in mind, that you're trying to start a conversation, it's a very, very different ballgame. And we talked about this a lot over the weekend, and this is something that I really want to instill in you guys, that if you're pitching to start a conversation, the idea is to get a response, right? It's not necessarily to get a yes, but it's just to get a response. If you're at a bar, if you're at a networking event, wherever that you might be talking to somebody who you don't know before, if you go up to them and say, hi, how are you doing? Your goal is for them to say, hi, I'm so-and-so, who are you? Not necessarily for them to, you know, say, yes, let's go out on a date, because that's not the question that you're asking. So let's think about how to reframe our pitches so that the question that we're asking is not, you know, this right, get to the point, give me an assignment, but the question that you're asking is, hey, can we talk about working together? All right, so now that we've gotten out of the way what the point of a pitch is, let's talk about how we know we are not yet ready to send a pitch. And while I'm talking about this, I'd love if over here in the question section you guys can chime in a little bit about some of the things that hold you back from sending pitches, because I'm going to answer some of them, but I bet that you guys have some that I haven't thought of. So, you know, maybe you have gone on a trip and you have some things that you think you might like to pitch and you write them up and you don't know who to send them to. Or you have found a publication but you just don't know who the right editor is. Or perhaps, you know, you've gone on a trip and, like Kendra has a great point here, she doesn't know what the cool angle is. Sometimes it's that we don't think we have enough information. And so just keep chiming in on these and I'll address them as we go through. But to start, here are five ways that you should know that you are not yet ready to hit send on that pitch. All right, number one, your idea is too narrow or broad. Oh, it looks like I'm missing, whoops, sorry, I'm missing a parenthesis there, for the publication you're pitching. Now, what this means is if you are pitching a national publication, national publications are the type of things that show up on any newsstand around the country, Travel and Leisure, Condé Nast, now there's Afar, Outside, these are the big ones. But there's also smaller national publications, you know, ones that have a specific focus. We've got a bunch going up on the database this week around adventure travel. You know, there's ones food and travel. La Cucina Italiana is another one. When you're pitching a national publication, you have to remember that their audience is national. Okay, people are saying they can't see the slide. I'm only seeing a frozen screen. The slide should be your idea is too narrow or broad for the publication you're pitching. Let me just double check the sharing here. It says that we're still showing. How about now? Do you see the slide is too narrow or broad for the publication that you're pitching? Yes, great. Okay, good. Okay, so when the idea is too narrow, what I mean by that is that you are trying to pitch a small mountain lodge in the Dolomites Mountains of Italy to a national American publication just as a new property or simply because it's a cool place. So that's too narrow for a national U.S. publication because it's not the kind of thing that's necessarily going to interest all of their readers. And so they're less likely to buy it. But what you can do, there's two ways to do this if your idea might be too narrow. You can do what's called a basket of kittens. I love this. This is by Abby Kozolchek, who is an editor at Every Day with Rachel Ray. She calls it a basket of kittens when you take a bunch of things that individually are small and unique, and you put them together, and then you've just got this collection of things that are all wonderful on their own. But when you put them together, how can you say no? How can you say no to a basket of kittens? And if you don't like kittens, I know some people don't like cats. One of my best friends just hates cats. Think about puppies or rabbits or just babies, whatever adorable animal floats your boat. So that's one way if you have something that you're trying to pitch to a national magazine that might be too narrow. Another way is rather than put together a bunch of individual places that are similar, that are all around the geographic distribution of that publication, is that you can take the individual thing you want to feature and you can make it indicative of a trend. So, for instance, you can say that this mountain lodge in the Dolomites is actually doing a very pioneering new thing. It is offering guests the opportunity to arrive by balloon, by hot air balloon, and take their meals in hot air balloons. It's almost like a hot air balloon hotel, okay? So that's very cool and different, and no one else is doing it. So you wouldn't be able to say that, but you could use that as an example of extremely high-level, high-luxury mountain getaways that are now becoming prevalent in light of ultra-rich people not knowing what to do with their money now that they own too many yachts, okay? So the flip side of that is, what if you are pitching a regional publication? What if you're pitching a small publication? You have to make sure that your idea is not too big. So what that means is, say you are pitching edible Hudson Valley, okay? So our house in the Catskills is in the Hudson Valley heritage area, and we've got an edible magazine that's separate from the edible New York City and the edible Brooklyn and all these edibles that's just for the Hudson Valley. So if I were to pitch them agritourism, right? So the opportunity to go spend the day at a farm, you know, petting the animals, picking the vegetables, taking cooking classes, that's way too big for them. What they would need is the kind of thing that we were just talking about that you can't pitch to a national magazine. They would need the story of one particular place in their coverage area that's doing that, and how the person started their agritourism, why they had the idea, why it's uniquely tied to the Hudson Valley. Okay, now the second way that you know, and now we should be on number two, there's no story. If you're seeing that slide, tell me yes, so I know that they're advancing. The other thing that means you're not quite ready yet to send your pitch is that it's just a topic. Okay, so somebody said previously that they get held back from sending pitches when they're not sure they have an angle. What an angle means, for those of you not familiar, an angle is like a slice of an idea. An angle is rather than agritourism, a specific type of agritourism that's opening in a specific area, that does a specific thing, that's indicative of a trend. Okay, we're making it very, very narrow. But the other thing is that editors complain frequently that new writers, new to them writers, and freelancers in general are often pitching them things that aren't stories. So we saw earlier the quote from Jordan Heller at Hemispheres that someone pitched him Macau, and that's not a pitch, that's just a place. But I think we also forget how compelling storytelling is. And that goes back to what I was just saying. Say in the Hudson Valley, we want to pitch this agritourism, which was started by somebody who, this is kind of a common story, but who worked on Wall Street and he got burnt out. And so rather than spending his high salary on going to bars and going to the Hamptons for the weekend, he took it and he invested in a property upstate and he created a place where other burnt out Wall Street people could come get away for a week and go back if they didn't want to leave it all behind the same way he did. So that's a story, right? It has a beginning. He was on Wall Street and burnt out. It has a middle, his journey of setting up this place, and it has an ending. Now he has this place where other burnt out Wall Street people can come, okay? And so one of the things that can really set your pitch apart and also make you not sure if you're ready to hit send is the lack of story, the lack of so what. Now, another thing that a lot of people miss that's a very, very clear sign that you are not ready to send a pitch is that you have not matched it to a specific section of a specific magazine. If the text of the pitch that you have written in your mind could apply to all sorts of magazines, it is not ready to send. Your pitch needs to include a specific reference to the section of the publication you are pitching in which your pitch should appear. And the great thing about that, when we get to the three-paragraph structure, is that you'll see that that helps you write the pitch. That helps you write the middle part of the pitch where you talk about what the story is going to be about, which is actually typically a struggling area for people. And so if you have access to the magazine database, oh, this is a very grainy picture, I apologize, but in the travel magazine database, the How to Pitch tab is where we help you make those connections. So in this magazine, we say that there's an out and about section that has four articles that are 400 to 1,000 words. Sometimes they're roundups or itineraries. So for instance, if you have a story, you would say to the editor, I propose a piece on mountain lodges you can reach by helicopter in the Dolomites. for your adventure section of Out and About, it would be around 400 words. This addresses that third part of what we want to show the editor, which is that we're familiar with their publication. And this, again, like I said, it's the thing that most writers forget to do. So if you do this, you are putting yourself above, I don't like to be hyperbolistic with numbers, but I really feel like 99.9% of people. Like, it to me made the difference when I started out pitching in terms of getting assignments. And a lot of other people that I know that have been able to become really successful travel writers very fast have hewed to this concept of always pitching a specific section of the magazine and had a very high, like 90% response rate as a result. All right, now, so we talked about if you don't have a story. It doesn't have a beginning and a middle end. There's nothing new about it. There's no action. But sometimes what happens is we just don't even know what really we're pitching. And so I see this happen when people have really, really long rambling pitches, and I review them, and I say, okay, we got to make this shorter. And they don't know what to cut. And part of that is because they don't actually know what their story is about. They have a collection of facts, and there might be a beginning and a middle and end, but they don't really know what the thread is. They don't know what the point is. And so one way to test this is to make sure that you can describe your article in one sentence. Now notice I didn't say a couple words or one word because, again, that's a topic. So one sentence has a verb and a noun and maybe some adverbs and maybe some clauses, but one sentence. So for instance, to go back to this Wall Street agritourism example that I'm using, I would say my story is about a former burnt-out Wall Street trader who left it all behind to start an agritourism in the Catskills that now helps keep other Wall Street brokers from being burnt out. Okay, so that's one sentence. It's a little long. I could probably make it shorter, but for now I think that'll do. But the most important part of having that one sentence is to make sure your idea passes the tell-a-friend test. Now, I think a lot of us, when we're thinking about our ideas before we've pitched them, especially when we first come back from a trip, I know I particularly am guilty of this, that if I first come back from a trip and my friends ask how it went, I don't want to tell them. Does anybody else suffer from this? I feel like I haven't quite formulated my ideas yet, and when people say, oh, how was your trip? Then that forces me to sort of tell them some bland description of what we did, which is not necessarily what the story is. I haven't quite formulated the story. But once you have that one sentence that we came up with in point four, once you have that one sentence of what the story is about, you can go around to people you know, and this works best with people who aren't in travel and aren't in journalism, to your significant other, to your mom, to I use this on the barista in my coffee place that I work a lot during the day. This is like my favorite thing. When I go to get coffee in the morning or the afternoon, they say, hey, how's it going? What are you working on? They know I'm a writer. And I say, oh, I'm working on a story about blah, 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 blah. And they, if they don't say, oh, that's cool, then I am missing something, okay? And you can literally try this on anybody. It doesn't have to be people you know. In fact, it's better if it's people that you don't know because that means they're going to give you honest feedback, whether that feedback is a blank stare or, oh, cool, or, I don't know if I really get that. What do you mean? Okay, so the tell-a-friend test is a really great idea, a great way to make sure that your idea is going to interest an editor as well, okay? All right, so let's get into the heart of it, the three-paragraph pitch formula. So I'm curious, and I ask this a lot in webinars when we talk about pitching, but just chime in over there in the questions tab about how long it takes you to write a pitch in minutes, hours, whatever metric works to sort of measure the amount of time that you're actually sitting at your laptop typing up the words that will eventually be in the email that you send out. I noticed an interesting thing around this when we started doing our travel writer focus groups is that people said one of two things. They either said 2 to 3 hours, which is what I'm seeing some of you respond over here in the questions section, or they said 15 minutes. It was almost uniformly one of the two. Okay, and what I've noticed about this is that there's a reason for that split, and we talked about this a lot over the weekend, and I called it the reconsidering the 2 hours and 45 minutes. So if you think about taking 3 hours to pitch, whereas some people take 15 minutes, that means that you're doing something for 2 hours and 45 minutes that other people aren't doing. And part of that is trying to figure out the answers to the questions that we already talked about. And so if that is what you're doing a lot of the time, if you're not typing, if you're researching other things online, if you're second guessing yourself, then one of the things that you can do, if you go and download those handouts in the handout sidebar, there's a sheet in there called the idea triage system, okay? And I recommend it's sort of like an 8-question version of what I just talked about the 5 reasons you should know you're not ready to hit send. So run all your ideas through that before you sit at your laptop to write the pitch, okay? This is very important. If you have sat down in the pitching moment, you are armed with the address of the editor, the name of the section, and you're not yet clear on what your idea is, you're going to totally kill your mojo. You're going to kill your writing flow, and you're going to kill, frankly, your like sense of self-confidence. And then that's going to affect the next couple pitches that you want to send that are ready to go. All right? So don't sit down at the laptop with an idea to pitch until it has passed that test, okay? These 5 things that we just talked about, or if you want just the easy sort of work through that pitch triage sheet that's in the handouts, okay? Because what the people who only take 15 minutes to do, the people who only take 15 minutes to write a pitch do, is that they are already armed with all of the pieces of the pitch, and they just fill them into this formula. So let's get into the formula. All right. So the perfect pitch formula is composed of 3 things, right? I talked about it being a 3-paragraph formula. And the one thing that I don't have on here is the headline. So the subject line of your email, which is going to be the headline of your piece, but we'll talk about that at the end, so don't worry about that. So the 3 parts of the 3-paragraph perfect pitch are the lead or intro. And any of you who have a journalism background, you'll notice that I use the journalism lead here. And that's because the lead of your pitch, the first paragraph, the intro of your pitch, should sound like the beginning of an article. And we're going to get into how to do that. Now, the second paragraph is the outline on what you're going to write. And it's very, very, very important that there is a stark contrast in the language between these 2 pieces. Okay, so if your first paragraph and your second paragraph, or what I often more often see is your 1st through 4th paragraphs, because they're all sort of telling the story. If your 1st through 4th or 1st through 2nd or 1st through 3rd paragraphs all have a similar tone and a similar writing style, you are writing yourself into a hole, okay? Because 2 things are happening. Editors don't have a lot of time to read pitches. They read them because they do need new ideas and they do need new writers, but they are very, very stressed out. And I've got a post on the blog about all of the things that editors do during their day, which I sent it to an editor of mine, whom it's based on, and he actually said, even just reading this stresses me out. So editors have a lot on their plates, and they resoundingly say, write me the shortest pitch you possibly can to get your idea across. So it's kind of a test. And so the way to do that and still show them your writing style is with this lead. So the lead is where you flex your descriptive muscles, you show them your journalistic style, but the outline of what you're going to write is not. The outline should be not necessarily vague, but the outline should be an outline. It should be an overview. It should not be going into excruciating or artistic detail about your piece, okay? Now, the third part, I like to call it the I'm so great paragraph, which is something that I borrowed, stole, frequently attribute, so I guess it's not stole, to another writer who has a blog called Dollars and Deadlines. And she calls it the I'm so great paragraph because this is where you're tooting your own horn. And this is important to remember because I think that in the I'm so great paragraph, even though it's kind of the home run, you're at the end, you're almost ready to send the pitch, this is where a lot of us falter. This is where we start to go on and on about our credentials or lack thereof, and sometimes we say, essentially, like, I might not have enough experience to write this piece, but I wish you would assign it to me. Or we simply plop an URL or any other number of things. But the I'm so great paragraph, all it needs to talk about is why you, in particular, should be writing this particular article. All right, so let's dive in. Now, when you're writing a lead, there's a couple almost formulas that you can use to get not just to the point, but to get to the impact, the attention-grabbing nature of the lead quickly. So one of my favorite ones is start in the middle, but I'm going to get back to that. Some easy ones are to start out with a too-good-to-be-true statistic. So, for instance, if you were writing about online marketing and you had a website that had a 0.2% bounce rate. So bounce rate means the number of times that somebody comes to your web page and leaves immediately to go somewhere else, a different website, rather than going to another page within your website, okay? So the average, or rather a very, very good bounce rate is 20 to 40%. So if you have a 0 point something percent bounce rate, that's practically unheard of, okay? So that would be the type of statistic that you could put in here. I like to use ones when I'm talking about the size of the travel industry. There's one that Travel Plus Social Good uses a lot, which is that 1 in 11 people in the world work in tourism. It's pretty staggering. That's a great way to start an article, if you have one of those available. Another way that's related but not numerically based is to demonstrate that something is the only thing of its kind. So I used a completely made-up example earlier of the hut in the mountains in the Dolomites that is reached only by hot air balloon. Then you have the option to take your meals in the hot air balloon, and it's almost like a hot air balloon hotel. All right? So that would be the kind of thing where somebody would open your email and see that and be like, what? This exists? This is amazing. This is ridiculous. A friend of mine who is based in France wrote a great piece one time about a volcano in France that you can visit. Who knew there's volcanoes in France, right? So another way to do this, though, especially if you're trying to pitch a narrative piece rather than a more factual roundup piece, is to use an anecdote, to use a moment from your trip. Now, there's two ways to go about this. One is to start in the middle. And in our workshop in London, we workshopped through an idea with a gentleman who had gone skydiving in Dubai. And so what we created as his pitch was an email that started with him looking at his feet about to jump out of the airplane. That's one way to start in the middle. Another way, or rather, another way to use an image from your trip, an experience from your trip, is to take the one that sticks with you. So it might not be the middle. It might be the end. It might be the beginning of an experience, such as Don George has a story in his collection of sort of the greatest hits of Don George. He's the author of Lonely Planet's book on travel writing, if you're not familiar with him, and he also runs the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference, which I highly recommend. So Don George has a story in which he talks about being in somewhere in Southeast Asia that was formerly war-torn, and he is near a border, and he's asked by one of the soldiers that are armed with AK-47s to come off into the jungle with him to meet the other soldiers, because they actually all meet every day for their cigarette break. And so even though there was all sorts of story that came after that, that one moment where the soldier sort of opened up the world to him, that this conflict is not felt on the ground as much as one might think, could be a place where he could start that story. All right, so then we get to the middle paragraph. Once you've, whether it's you've set the scene or you've grabbed the editor's attention with a statistic or something unique, then you need to get into what you're actually pitching them, okay? Now, this is the part where that one-sentence description is really important. And I recommend that whatever your one-sentence description is, you stick it in this paragraph, either at the beginning or the end. So what you can do here, and this is a very, very formulaic paragraph to write, is to start by saying, I'd like to propose an article for your insert name of section. So, you know, when I showed you the part of the Travel Magazine database previously, we talked about, I believe it was the out and about section, okay? So you'd say, I'd like to propose a 400-word article for your out and about section in the section that you cover adventure travel, and then you say your point. This is the one sentence description. So this is where you say, on a brand new once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to stay in a mountain hut that can only be reached by hot air balloon. Okay, now you're going to talk about what you're going to cover. So this is a great opportunity to sort of go back to high school or middle school or whenever it was that you had the three-paragraph, three-point thesis structure. Okay, a lot of people in this section try to include practically their whole article, the whole kitchen sink, but in overview. They try to say, oh, and there's this, and there's that, and the other thing, and there's also this, and if you'd like, I could rework the article, and I could also feature this. But the editor doesn't need to know all those things right now. They only need to know the point. You told them the point, and now they want to believe that you can deliver on it, okay? So I've said that this hot air balloon hotel hut business is the only one in the world. So what I might say is three other things that make them unique. Or if we're going to go back to our Hudson Valley Wall Street broker guy, I could talk about three activities that he offers at his agritourism. Or I could talk about three moments in his journey to set up this agritourism that I'm going to mention in the article. But keep it brief and keep it an overview. And keep each of those points from ballooning out of hand in description, okay? Remember what I said before. The lead is for description and for flexing your journalistic muscle, whereas this middle paragraph is where we tell the editor what we're going to cover. And this is because you want to hook their interest, but then you want to keep them on the line. You don't want to talk them to death about your article idea. You want them to be wanting more, okay? So don't give them the whole kit and caboodle, okay? The one other thing that you can have in here is what research you have done or will do. So if you have a trip coming up, this is where you can say, I'm headed to the Hudson Valley next weekend, and I will be visiting the Sagar Tourism and interviewing the owner. Or you can say, I've recently returned from the hot air balloon hut, and I have photos available to accompany the piece. Now, one note on photos, because I did not include this in the frequent questions at the end of the call. People often ask me how to tell the editor they have photos or if they should tell the editor they have photos. Now, there's two separate answers here. If it is a major newsstand magazine, so we're talking Afar, Travel and Leisure, Condé Nast, super major, like women's magazine level, we're talking $2 a word, they don't want your photos, and they don't even want to know that you have photos, because they will either be sending someone out to take those photos, or they will use stock photos, because that is what they do. However, pretty much anything below that, and I'm even talking magazines that pay $1 a word, if you have gone somewhere that is hard to get to, unique, it's unlikely that they'll be able to get those photos from anywhere else, or even necessarily from the destination, tell them that you have photos, because in this day and age, when budgets have shrunk so much, and it's very much less likely than it used to be for people to just send out a photographer, if you have the photos available, that can be a total make or break for getting the assignment, okay? And this is where you can mention it. You can say, I've already done this trip, and I have photos available to accompany it. Now that leads us right into the About You paragraph, okay? And I'm just curious, over here in the questions box, how long does it take you guys to figure out what to write in the About You paragraph for each pitch? Do you have a standard one that you just sort of cut and paste? Do you write them custom for each article? Do you sort of have a couple that you use, depending on if it's in different topic areas that you cover, such as maybe you do ecotourism, but you also do food, and so you have some different ones? Let me know over there in the questions box about that. Because what I found is that this goes two ways. Either people write a custom one every single time, and they mention different things, or they have one that they just drop in, which is not necessarily the right answer for each article. It's not really highlighting their expertise for each article. Okay, so when you write that third paragraph, what I want you to keep in mind is that the only things that should go in there should be relevant to the specific piece. If you are pitching an article and you have a blog, the fact that you have a blog is not relevant. If you have an award-winning blog on Italian food that you have had for 15 years, and you are pitching something about a specific type of Italian pasta, that is relevant, okay? But you have to frame it in a way that's relevant. You have to say that it's Italian food and it's award-winning and you've had it forever, because that's positioning you as an expert. But otherwise, I see so many people say that they have a blog and then just put a link to it. Like either they drop the link in, so it's a naked link, or they've linked my blog, okay? An editor who is getting an unsolicited email from you, as in you are pitching them out of the blue, and they don't already know you, is never, ever going to click on a link that is hidden like that. And if you just send a link to your blog, just splat, not only do they not click on it, but they're not very happy because they want to know why you should write this specific piece. They don't want to spend 5 hours looking through your blog to see if you are the right person. You need to tell them. And so if you have written for other magazines that are relevant to the piece, that's great. I used to write only about Italy, and when I pitched articles about Italy, I would say, I write regularly for Italy Magazine, I've written for Italian American, so on and so forth. If you have written for very high-level, impressive magazines, say for instance, you have a clip from USA Today, or the New York Times, or the Wall Street Journal, that's great because that shows the editor that you have the chops to write, which is relevant to the specific piece. It is relevant to them commissioning you, okay? And so a formula that I really like here is to say, I am a, depending on how you feel about yourself, you can say, I'm a travel journalist or a travel writer. Okay, so pick whichever feels right to you. And add freelance if you're freelance in front of that. I'm a freelance travel journalist who is based in only if it's relevant to your piece, okay? If you're pitching something about South Africa and you're typically based in London, not important. So, for instance, if I'm pitching something about the Hudson Valley, I'm going to say I'm a freelance travel journalist based in New York. If I'm pitching this one about the Dolomites, I'm just going to say I'm a freelance travel journalist. Who has written for, this is the next part of the formula, you say who has written for, and then you include your most impressive publications or the ones that most fit this piece. Don't include more than three. Don't include links. Just include the titles. And then include whatever else makes you relevant for this piece. Again, like I said, if you have a special expertise area, then mention that. If you have, for instance, a degree from the University of Gastronomic Sciences in Italy, and you're pitching a food piece, that's a great thing to mention. Likewise, if you're pitching a food piece but healthy food and you have a nutrition background, I've got a question over here on the sidebar. Should you link to your most impressive pieces you've ever written, even if it's not relevant? Now, notice I said mention the outlets, okay? I'm going to address this later in the 10 most commonly asked questions about whether or not you should link to your pieces, okay? But the partial answer to that question for now, and we'll circle back to this later, is that you should say a freelance travel writer slash journalist who has written for and the places, but no links, okay? Remember, we don't want to include links that the editor is going to be scared to click on that is going to make them think that your pitch is spammy. All right. Now, I said that I would get to headlines, even though that's not part of this three-paragraph structure, because it's super important. It's actually the most important thing. So if your headline seems spammy, seems uninteresting, or just is, in general, anything but absolutely fascinating to the editor, you have greatly decreased your chances of getting your pitch accepted, let alone getting a response. There's a great statistic on this that I love, which is that only 20% of unsolicited pitches get opened. And I don't know how accurate that is, and I think it really depends from editor to editor. But the thing is that this is your number one hurdle. We all think our number one hurdle is our idea, but that's only part of it. Our number one hurdle is getting the editor to open the email. And once they've opened the email, our second hurdle, our new most important hurdle, is getting them to keep reading past the first sentence. So when you write your pitch, you might be obsessing over the About Me paragraph. You might be obsessing over the what the story is about paragraph, but the sections in the beginning, the subject line of your email, and the lead are really the ones that are most important, that you need to obsess the most over. So for the subject line of your email, you want to put what would be the headline of your article if you were to write it. So I've got a couple examples here, and you'll notice they're all a bit sensational. And that's for a reason. We need to get the editor's attention right away. So you want to write a subject line of your email that is so attention-grabbing that when they are cooking dinner on Sunday night for their family and they're stirring that pasta and they flip over to their email, they see this and they go, huh, that's weird. What is that about? Okay? We want to make sure that our headlines are grabbing attention. And part of the way we do this is through the five things that I asked you to ask yourself before you write your pitch at all. We make sure that we have a point, we make sure that we have a story, and we make sure that people care. All right, so if you have any questions about the pitch structure, just throw those in over there, because now I'm going to get to the most common pitch questions, but if we have any other ones that aren't on there, I'll circle back to them at the end. So as I'm going through those, just go ahead and type in the chat box whatever else is on your mind, and if it's not already on the slides, then I'll circle back to those at the end. All right. Whoops. Okay, the 10 most common pitching questions. Now, I can see who's on the call. I know you've all got a bit of experience, and so I'm not going to dwell over things too much that are super, super basic, but I will address them as we go through. So one of the first ones in order in terms of writing the pitch is, where should I name drop? And this sounds a little weird. Where should I name drop? So I don't necessarily mean, oh, so-and-so told me to pitch you. This can also be where you include information like, I saw that you recently became the editor of this publication, or I saw that you were looking for pitches, anything like this. All right, I think a lot of people turn the name dropping what I call the preamble into both something longer than it should be and also a substitute for a proper lead. If you have any sort of name dropping or preamble, you got to get in and get out. You got to say, so-and-so told me that you might be interested in this idea, and then immediately launch into your lead. Or, I saw that you recently took over editing the travel section of Rachel Ray. I have a pitch I hope you'll enjoy. Okay? Very short one sentence, and then make a line break, and then start again with your lead. Okay? All right. This one I get a lot. Can I pitch an editor something I've already written about on my blog? This is very tricky because, especially when you're on contract with a destination, you want to get those blog posts about your trip up really quickly. But if you have written about something on your blog, an editor is infinitely less likely to buy your pitch for two reasons. One is that your blog counts as a publication, so that idea has already been published. So you certainly cannot pitch the editor the exact same thing you've already written on your blog. Second, the editor doesn't know you from the homeless person outside of their office door. They do not know that you have the wherewithal to write them a completely different piece than what you've already posted on your blog. So if you have pitched them something, which is the very first article on your blog, and they click over and they see that, they're going to assume, mistakenly, but unfortunately this is how the situation is, that you are just pitching them the same thing and that you don't know any better. So I highly recommend, if you have a really great idea from a trip that you think you can sell to a magazine, to not put that on your blog at all, for sure, and to hold off on posting about that trip on your blog until after you've sent out some pitches. Now, if you have an obligation, then do your social media. This is something that I just heard from someone the other day, is that they do essentially like an Instagram-style roundup, like a photo roundup of a post, which essentially has no text. So then you're not really taking away from potential stories you could write. But the bottom line here is, if you want to pitch stories about a trip, and especially, you know, if it's a hotel that you had on your trip or an activity that you did on your trip, particularly keep those out, because editors won't know that you are going to write them a different story. All right. Should you tell the editor you've already written the article? Now, in this case, I'm not talking about times when you've already written it on your blog. I'm talking about the very common and awkward situation where you have taken a writing class or you have a writing mentor, and they ask you to write an article out of the blue, with no assignment, with no connection to an editor, with no editing, with no idea wrangling to fit the magazine. When you have just written an article, unsolicited, unmatched to publication, in these cases, if you tell an editor you have done that, you will immediately be branded as an amateur, because ideas do not exist without publications. And I hope that this got across in the beginning when I was talking about the five ways to know you're not ready to write a pitch yet. And one of them is, you have not pegged this idea to a specific section of a specific magazine. Because when you have a specific section of a specific magazine, what happens is that there's a clear format and a clear focus for your idea. Over the weekend, we had somebody who had an idea for an interview with a photographer that they had met on a boat trip. And this photographer was a photographer for BBC Travel. They were a professional travel photographer. And they had consequently discovered an animal that was not known to exist, a whale shark, it's called, in the Philippines around a particular island. And so this person had a really cool story. And we found an interview column in a Filipino travel magazine that we thought this would be perfect for. However, that particular interview focuses on how a person travels and that person's travel tips. Now, does that mean that this person is not going to be a good interview source? No. But it means that when you write that pitch and when you write the article and when you do the interview, it needs to be around the questions that they typically ask in that interview section. If you had already done that interview, if you had already written that article with different interview questions that were more about the experience of discovering the whale sharks or what it's like to be a BBC photographer, that wouldn't have been a fit for that section. And so that's why it's really important from the get-go to know where and what you are pitching. Because then that second paragraph, when we talk about what goes into the story, really writes itself. So for instance, in the case of this interview that I was just talking about, you know, we saw the section and the questions were like, what are your favorite, you know, apps on your phone? What gear do you bring with you? You know, what is your best tip for surviving the airports or layovers? In our pitch, we can say, I will interview so-and-so. They are a BBC photographer who discovered a new animal or a previously unknown animal, the whale shark, off the coast of this island. He's agreed to participate in this interview and discuss. And this is where you put in what we saw in that section. And discuss his favorite apps, how he gets his shots on his phone, and what he does when he's stuck on a layover. Okay, so that takes all of the indecision out of that middle section of the pitch. But if you have already written an article without a magazine in mind, you can't do that. You can't frame it to the particular publication. And so if you were to tell the editor, I'd like to pitch you an essay on a mountain hut in the Dolomites that's only reached by hot air balloon, it's 900 words, are you interested? I've already written it. They're going to say, what do you mean you've already written it? I didn't commission it. What is it about? They're going to immediately think that not only they are not professional, which was one of the things we're trying to show them when we start this conversation, but also that you're not familiar with their publication, because it might be that there are no spaces in their publication for a 900-word essay about one particular accommodation, but there's places for a 500-word essay. And so if you had just pitched them that you wanted to write an essay about your experience without saying you already written it, what they could do is say, hey, we don't actually have a space that's 900 words, but we do have a space that's 500 words. Can you write it to that length? And then you would say, sure. But if you say that you've already written it, they're not going to ask you that. So the reason we don't tell an editor that we've already written the piece is because we want to respect that they know their publication and their audience better than we do, and we want to give them the opportunity to workshop that idea, to have that conversation about the idea with us. All right, moving forward. Can I pitch more than one publication or editor the same idea at the same time? This is super controversial, and it shouldn't be. And I got a really funny bunch of responses to this when we did the focus group. Some people said, not whether they do or don't, but they said, I heard you shouldn't do that. And this is very telling, because it's one of these things that a lot of people just feel like they don't know. But the real crux of it in today's economy is that it's ludicrous for an editor to expect us to sit around and wait for a month to hear back from them, or not hear back from them at all, and then send the idea out to another editor. We would spend 12 months pitching 12 editors and potentially not getting anywhere. So my response to this is absolutely yes. You can absolutely pitch the same idea at the same time to more than one editor or publication, but here is how. So we talked about how to match your idea to a section. So that will change your idea. So the pitch won't be the same words. You will frame that idea around a different section, different magazine. Now the second thing is, I do not recommend that you pitch competing magazines the same idea at the same time. So don't pitch Travel and Leisure and Condé Nast. Don't pitch Savoir and Afar. I don't know if they're really competitors, but don't pitch, for instance, Edible Brooklyn and Edible Manhattan. Anything like that. Don't pitch two magazines, the United Hemispheres magazine and American Airlines American Way. Don't pitch two magazines that have a potential overlap in their audience, because that will not be looked upon well by an editor. However, if you pitch them an idea and then they get back to you a month later and say, hey, yeah, I'd like to assign you this idea, and you say, oh, by the way, just so you know, I already sold it to so-and-so, they have the opportunity to say, oh, well, I'll have to be faster next time. And I've definitely heard this from people, from writers, that editors have said this to them. Or they can say, oh, you've already sold it to Hudson Valley Edible? That's not really a conflict for us here at AirAsia's airline magazine, so that's fine. I'll buy the idea anyway. So give them the opportunity, give more editors the opportunity to buy your ideas. That's how you become a six-figure travel writer. All right, how detailed should your middle paragraph be? This, like I said, is the part where people really stumble, where they start to go into way too many paragraphs of description. So circling back to what I said earlier, 3 points. You want to say, first of all, what section you're pitching, and the one sentence description of what your article is about, and then 3 points about what you're going to cover, and then any research that you've already done. And that's it, okay? Unless you are pitching the New Yorker, in which case you need to have a 2-page pitch, that's all that should be in there. Anything else the editor wants to know if they are interested in your idea, they will write you back and ask you. It happens to me all the time. I sometimes get whole pages of questions from an editor, and not even when I send a super short pitch, but because they want to know that you have done your homework and they want to know if it's a good fit for their publication. All right, this is another one that goes back to that middle paragraph. Should I include every place that I'll cover? This is for articles where you might be covering 10 things or 5 things. Just cover a couple, just 3, just a handful. What I've heard from editors across the board is that they don't want you to tell them nothing. They don't want you to say, I'd like to pitch you a roundup on 10 mountain huts that you can stay in around Europe to have a back to nature experience. They don't want to just know what your idea is. They want to know that you have done some research. They want to know that you've turned up a couple. So you can say, for instance, this one in the Dolomites that you can reach by hot air balloon, one in the French Alps, and one on top of, you know, Mount Etna in Sicily. They want to know that you have some concrete ideas, but they don't need to know what all of them are. Now, clips. Somebody asked about this. Somebody said, what should you link to your most impressive pieces you've ever written, even if it's not relevant? The thing about clips is that they should not be included in your pitch, ever. I know this sounds a little controversial, but this goes back to what I just said. If an editor wants more information, they will ask you. And it boggles a lot of people's minds, but I think I don't ever get asked for clips. I don't think when I first started I was ever asked for clips. I would pitch an idea, and I would say where else I had written, and maybe one or two times people would ask me for clips, but those weren't even like the people that turned into ideas. Those were sort of like ongoing relationships. But if somebody likes your idea, they're going to roll with it. They can see your writing, okay? And if they want to see clips before they commission you, they're going to write you back and ask after they like your idea. But don't mince, don't waste time figuring out exactly which clips to include. Tell them where you've written, because they want to know that you've been edited before, and so you're a capable writer who knows how to work within the journalistic system. And certainly do not attach anything. Editors will never open files from people that they don't know. All right, this is related. Should I include a link to my blog or my writing portfolio in the About Me paragraph? Now, I told you people will never click links that aren't naked, but I've seen a lot of people paste like a naked link to www.myname.com into that paragraph. But the place for that link is in your signature. The place for that link is absolutely not in your About You paragraph, because as we discussed, the About You paragraph, the I'm So Great paragraph, should only be about why you should write this particular article, and your entire writing portfolio is not the answer to that question. All right, how should you end that email? After your I'm So Great, after your I'm About Me paragraph, what should you say before you say thanks or best or kind regards? There's a lot of different options, and I've seen a lot of them, and I've seen editors say a lot of them are kind of a waste of time or space, and these are a lot of the ones that I've seen that are sort of filler. So thanks for your consideration. I look forward to your response. I look forward to the opportunity to work with you. They're all a bit flattering, and there's ones that are less flattering that are more demanding. For instance, never say, I know your readers will enjoy this article. Editors really don't like when you tell them what their readers are going to like. So what I found to be really effective in this section is to say, may I write, and then include your headline that we've had in our subject line, for your, and include the name of the section you're pitching. And then say thank you, or kind regards, or best. Because what this does is it circles back to your idea, which was cool enough to get them to open the idea, the email in the first place, and then it also reminds them that you have done your homework, and it asks them a question, okay? And I'm going to get in the next question into following up, and one of my favorite quotes from editors about following up. But one of the great things about asking them the question at the end of this email is if you've gotten them to read this far, to read to that very, very last sentence, then you have their attention, they're interested in your idea, and there's a pretty good chance that they want to work with you. So drive it home. Ask them one more time. Ask them a question so that they will respond to your email one way or another. All right. How long should I wait to follow up? I'm curious. Chime in over here on the chat box what you think of this, because this is something that I've heard a lot of on the writer side. The editors are pretty uniform, but I've heard a lot of different schools of thought from writers in terms of what they've been told or what they think. Not too many based on data, but interesting concepts around how long people think they should wait to respond. So while you guys are chiming in on that, this is one of my favorite quotes about editor response times. At the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference that I mentioned earlier, this question came up. How long does it take you to get back to my pitch? And there was sort of, you know, a nervous chuckle, and all the editors looked at themselves. And then bravely, Peter Fish from Sunset Magazine, which is based, it's based in, I think, Oakland now, recently moved, but it covers the Western United States. He said, if it's a yes, 15 minutes. If it's a no, half an hour. But if it's a maybe, forever. But I try to get back in a reasonable time. If it's a maybe, and say I'm putting it in the hopper, and in the meantime, feel free to pitch anywhere, and just let me know if you've placed it. But the thing about this is that it belies an interesting problem that we have as freelance writers, which is that if an editor has not responded to your pitch, they might be thinking about it. They might be trying to find a home for it. They might be trying to find an issue for it. And so you run the risk, if you do not follow up with them, of waiting a certain amount of time and then taking your idea elsewhere, or of getting it picked up by somebody else and never knowing that this editor was interested. And so across the board, I've heard editors say that they are totally fine with you following up with them in 2 weeks. That by then, it's probably dropped to the bottom of their inbox, and if they're not already considering it, then you should remind them so that they take a look at it. And if they are considering it, it's a good amount of time for them to have gone to an editorial meeting, put some thought into it, and have a better idea of exactly what Peter's saying here, of responding in a reasonable amount of time if he's thinking about it. So what I recommend is to follow up twice, once in 2 weeks, just to say, hey, I wanted to check in and see if you got this, and then once in another 2 weeks to say, hey, I hope you've seen this pitch. I just want to let you know. If I haven't heard from you, I'm moving on. Now, the thing with this is, like I said, you can totally be doing simultaneous pitches, but they shouldn't be to competing markets. Now, once you've sent that second follow-up, that's the sign that you are going to pitch the same idea to a competing market. So if you've had it with Travel and Leisure, now you're going to take it to Condé Nast Traveler. If you've had it with Savoir, now you're going to take it to Afar. If you've had it with Budget Traveler, now you're going to take it to National Geographic Traveler, and so on. Okay, so if you've got, we've reached the end of our time, and I don't want to keep you. Hopefully, we've covered all of your bases, and I really appreciate all of you taking an hour out of your day to join me today.